Hi, Sue Hall here, and welcome to the second podcast in our fourth series of Talking the Dis Out of Dyslexia, hosted by the Whole Dyslexic Society. On March 27th, 2021, TEDx Bear Creek Park live-streamed 12 talks, and I was privileged to be one of the speakers. The whole process was truly amazing, from the moment my original script was accepted to the live-streamed event. And you can hear about that in podcast number 4.1. Today, I'm excited to introduce Noel Bentley to you, who coached some of us and introduced all of us at the TEDx on March 27th. Noel is a speaker, trainer, MC, humorist, motivator, educator, and storyteller. So who better to introduce himself than Noel? Welcome. Thank you for coming here.
Great. Thanks very much, Sue.
Oh, it's my pleasure, honestly. Thank you. Now, I think our listeners will have gathered that you are basically a communicator. You help other people to communicate. So how did this all start?
I guess this whole direction probably started about 11 years ago. I went to Toastmasters because for two reasons. One, I was new in living in Edmonton and didn't really know many people and had lived there before, you know, just briefly had gone to Toastmasters. Oh, it's a great way to meet people. And then secondly, public speaking had completely defeated me throughout my life, like just not a little, like a lot. For some reason, something compelled me to be better at it. So I ended up in a Toastmaster meeting and that it just grew from there. You know, the confidence, enjoying it, sort of found a use for a sense of humor, you know, for an audience. And it becomes very addictive to hear laughs.
Yeah.
And it grew from there. And when we moved out west, even farther west, I really started to enjoy speaking in front of larger audiences, had the opportunity to MC a few events and enjoy it. Just started to snowball. So other projects and things started to fall by the wayside so I could focus on this in different fashions, as you said. So I do have sort of three projects on the go at once.
Brilliant. And I'm hearing that you help people to communicate both non-verbally and verbally. So do you want to start with the non-verbal one where you took photography and art into this non-verbal communication side?
Yeah, that was something that came up when you and I were talking. One of my hobbies was always photography. A friend at Toastmasters, they started a group they call it a society working with people with developmental disabilities. It's called Chrysalis. My friend worked there and she invited me to one of those brunches, right? And I'm like, oh no, here we go. Fine. Not a problem. I'll support. I'll bring the checkbook. It's a good idea. And they work with people with developmental disabilities. And that means people have challenges mentally and physically, and usually both. You know, in Toastmasters, for sure, you learn about nonverbal communication. But what I didn't realize is by the end of the brunch, I was dying to become part of this group. I went to the volunteer coordinator and they have this amazing way of working in such that they would help you find your place in the organization rather than say, here's your volunteer job. So I wanted to do photography. They said, that sounds great. We have a huge art program. Let's get you going. Right. And within a month, I was able to create my own photography program. And that's when you learn what matters to them through their photography, what they take pictures of, they care about and love. And there were many people who had challenges with communication. And there were a couple of people that were nonverbal. They couldn't speak. They could understand everything we said. So there was one person, Chris, and this was the one just got me. Chris was completely nonverbal. This huge bear of a man, 6 feet tall, well, probably 6'4", jet black hair, huge blue eyes. So we sit down, so he gets to see his photographs for the first time on this big screen. And he starts leaning forward and he's loving it because this is what really engaged him. This is what he cares about. He opened his mouth and I swear I thought he was going to talk for the first time. I thought I was going to witness a medical miracle. Now he didn't, which is fair enough. But the fact that I actually believed it for a moment, you could see the magic of photography and being able to wanting to communicate what it meant to him. And so some of Chris's photos actually ended up getting printed for our art show and lots of people loved them and bought them. And you know, that was a way that Chris could communicate with others without having to speak. And so, yeah, you really learned about it.
And having seen that, that's going to spur you on even more, right? That was just exciting.
It was. I love telling that story because when it happened, I couldn't believe. I'm such a skeptical person, but how I felt at that moment was completely different. But that's good. You know, it was a changing moment for me that probably no one else saw, but I loved it.
And that's interesting for me because I think you know a little bit about what we do. We enjoy enabling children and adults to make models of meaning for the words that don't normally have meaning. So typically words like that and if and of, you look them up in the dictionary, you make a model for the meaning, and then you have a picture because we mainly think in pictures. But I remember there was this one student who came for a program, and his mom said he's not very good at expressing himself. So she said, I really want him to be able to put his thoughts on paper and be able to write what he's thinking. And it was very interesting. By the end of the week, he wasn't very much better at writing, but every model that he made for the meaning of those words told you volumes about what was going on in his head. It was just magical. He was able to express himself, but it only came through in that 3D form. And you're saying that Chris was able to express himself in photography.
Absolutely. You got an idea of what was happening because you have to restrict yourself to that frame, or you have to restrict yourself to what's in your hands. And this is what's most important. I realized that it was a way of understanding people that I was not aware of or paying attention to.
Brilliant. And then with the verbal way of expressing, you've got into storytelling. Is that right?
It is. When you do public speaking in Toastmasters, you're going to do storytelling. And I think people are starting to really clue in and get back to it. I mean, we're humans. We are storytellers. Come on. I mean, that's all we do. Our whole history is based on that. We're kind of strangely disenfranchised or moved away from that. Mm-hmm. I ended up having the opportunity to work in a project here called Surrey Shares, where I was asked to be a storytelling coach and paired with a life skills coach. And we're going to teach storytelling and life skills to people 55 plus.
Wow.
We pitched the project to what is an ongoing larger, much, much larger government project here in Surrey. And it's intended to help seniors. But I stopped using that word because every time I said, if someone wanted to join a seniors project, people, no. Well, it's 55 plus. Well, I'm 55 plus.
Exactly.
So yes, it usually ends up being about 12 weeks to help people decide on a story and really learn how to tell that story. But ultimately, there's so much more happening when you learn storytelling. And there's a lot of papers talking about the cognitive benefits, especially people who are seniors, for lack of a better term, or upper ages and very young.
Well, they've had a lot of stories that they've witnessed, that they've been part of.
Well, it's true. But what happens when they tell it, when they work through it, good things happen to your brain. It helps your brain function. We had people who had been through challenges that would have probably hurt their neural networks. I can't say too much because it was something that they went through, but they were worried about memorizing their stories. And I said, well, it's okay. You don't have to memorize it, but they wanted to memorize it. Okay, let's go. But they memorized 15-minute stories. That's hard for anyone. How long was yours? Exactly.
10 minutes. It was torture.
It is. But they did. And what it told me is that they were worried about memorizing a short story. They can do it. And their brains are able to do this, but it takes work. But imagine what's happening. All of the good things that are happening to the neurons inside that brain when you work on storytelling. It's just a great way to engage your brain in a way that benefits you and it can benefit others.
Honestly, I had never thought of that. And when you have your next flurry of students for next year's TEDx, maybe you could say to them at the beginning, this is going to be really good for your brain.
Yeah.
It might be a good selling point. But obviously, yeah, it takes a lot of brain work. You're right.
Yeah, apart from the stress we put you through and all the other things you had to work on, it's like a workout.
I used to call it boot camp affectionately. No, it was totally worth it. And you feel the young have good stories to tell. That's interesting for me because a lot of my kids have the most amazing imagination. So obviously many of their stories are imaginary, but they have a lot of difficulty putting them on paper. Sometimes it's the spelling, but most often I see them having difficulty knowing where to start. Because if you're thinking that your imagination is like an IMAX theater, it's constantly changing. There's sound, there's movement, it's huge. And somebody gives you a piece of paper and says, write down what you see. And you think, well, but it just changed. Pictures don't go left to right.
Well, that's very interesting. I'd be curious to sort of work with more people that have that way of working. When I got a coach for storytelling, because I realized, like, come on, I need to get much better at this to help mm-hmm. who I'm helping. She was insistent that people only get one page. They're actually only allowed one. You can put whatever you want on it, but if you add words, you got to take some away. The whole point was, we don't want you to memorize your story. We want you to tell it. What do you see? Bring us into your world. And it would be interesting to see if people who work that way can literally watch the story and tell it to us. I don't know. It just seems more like what we try and get a lot of people to do. We actually want to break them out of some of their habits and get them into the point where we are seeing what they experienced.
Yeah, I get you. When you have a story in your head, does it come in as a picture or does it come in as words? How does it work for you?
I think what happens with my writing is usually I end up with a little experience or moment or thought or idea, and it can be from anything. And from there, I write it down. This is what I always ask people to do if they don't already, to have that little journal. All your ideas, put them in there. And for humor, people go, I don't have anything funny. Well, you weren't paying attention because you had that hundreds of things that were funny. You just didn't notice it. It's all about being able to see it or hear it or however it is that you acknowledge it, learn how to use that sense. But for me, I usually end up with a small idea that I build on. So the smallest thing will create a picture and image that amuses me. And from there, I start adding other pieces. Now, for me, I do have to write them down just because it's easier to write them down and put them in a journal, but they have to connect somehow. It could be the silliest thing. Okay, I'll give you this one because this one just tickles me for some reason. Maybe not everyone. Watching TV, and on TV was this headline, honest to goodness, Oak Bay in Victoria, Oak Bay to help restrict deer population through use of contraception. Now, I thought that is like the most West Coast headline I've ever seen. And they're being serious. And from there, okay, the mental images just go crazy, but you just start to imagine. And that's sort of how my stories work. I usually like taking real things that are odd or different in some way, and then let's create a whole story. And I like ending up in a fantasy world that no one has ever seen before. So you do actually have to be able to create those images and see them to transmit them. So it is interesting. It usually starts with something like that, a little bit of transcription into written, but then it's images and other things that somehow connect, create this rich visual world that is rarely real, but no one cares by the end, because that's the whole point of the story. We want to have an experience in that case.
Yeah. So you start with a written word, it creates a sort of image, and then you go off to the races with parts of that image.
Start making connections, connections of concepts or ideas, whatever they might be.
And where I think the humor comes in is when you have two images for one word. I mean, I've got to be honest, I'm thinking contraception. Yeah. And there's several images that pop into my mind for that, right? You can go off into so many different variations of how that scenario could form. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I do. That is one of my favorite comedy routines to do. And it is incredibly visual and 18 plus for that one. When I think about that and the moments in there that led up to other parts of it, it is playing on words and images and double meanings. But there's also something interesting. And I don't know in terms of communication, if people think about this in storytelling and humor, one of the best things you can do for your audience is just give them enough so that they create the image and the world in their mind without over explaining it. That is exceedingly difficult to do.
Right. It's incredibly effective because then you just have them sitting there giggling to themselves and you know that there's a film going on in their head.
Yeah, that's where you want them. You're all watching kind of the same film, but everyone's creating it and they almost feel like they're one step ahead of you, but you're leading them there.
And they almost feel that they've created that.
Yeah, let them participate. And maybe they have a different version of it. No, who cares? But you're right. It's true. They may see something that you didn't even intend, but that's fine. It's a richer experience for them. Rather than over explaining and trying to use your words to create that image, let them create the image that works best for themselves.
Yeah. Because that explains a lot of times where so-called comedy lines fall flat because it was something that was rehearsed and it was funny the first time, but it seems to have sort of lost it during the delivery. Does that make sense?
You can over explain. Absolutely. Try and put too much in there. Yeah, there's a lot to do with that. And it's very similar in storytelling. I've noticed a lot of people who start out with storytelling try and cram every single detail into it. I call it a book report, which is something that maybe a lot of people with whom you work would just absolutely find misery. Because first of all, it's probably I have to read it. And then second, I have to translate it. And they're looking for a regurgitation. And it's the best way to lose someone's interest is to give them a book report.
Oh, absolutely. I'm totally with you on that one.
People often in their stories go, well, you know, I want to make sure the audience knows exactly what I'm saying. And I ask them, are you sure? They're going to bring part of themselves anyway. Like some great art allows that own interpretation. We see our own things whenever you read a book, you bring part of yourself to it anyway. So treat that with your stories and your humor and whatever your art is.
Absolutely. This is very cool. I'm enjoying this. Thank you. So if you had a child who couldn't get their thoughts on paper, what would you encourage them to do? Would you encourage them to draw pictures and then get the words from the pictures? Or have you worked with many younger children?
I haven't worked with many younger children. However, working with people through Chrysalis, and I did some photography as well, it really gave me that insight that this was a great way for people to express themselves. What I also did was associate with these people on a greater scale, because they weren't just doing photography. This was a huge art program. They were doing painting. They were doing sculpture and materials and everything. And this was how a lot of people expressed themselves. But they communicated as well, and it was easier for them to do that. And there was a Toastmaster group there too. So it was very interesting to see how people do that. I like photography because it makes you focus on what you're doing. It makes you very much concentrate on the frame. It's kind of like a painting, because whatever's in the frame matters, and then nothing else. Also, I think verbal storytelling really is one of the best ways to do it. Frankly, I think the recording of it is better. The oral recording, or A-U-R-A-L, the oral out loud recording, is far richer and greater than a written story. I've gravitated towards it. I much prefer that.
Maybe we should encourage storytellers to go into schools and share their art with children. Because I know what you mean about the book report thing and just the regurgitation. It's not very exciting.
It's not. We get the step-by-step or just too many details. A couple of really wonderful details make something rich, but you can absolutely drain the life out of a story with too many details. And that's when you start to see people's eyes glaze over. It's interesting that you mention it, because here's my pet theory, which I can absolutely base on no scientific knowledge. But when I watch people who have the absolute amazing ability to drain every ounce of fun out of the story they're telling, we all know those people, and we may have been them ourselves. But if you watch them when they're speaking, they're not looking at you. Their eyes are looking up as they're recalling things. It's almost like there's some sort of cascade or dam or something, or the connections are being made in their brain, and they're uneasy not mentioning all of them. They feel compelled to tell you all of them as they feel them. And the ability to stop themselves is something they don't have. And so I almost feel there's something happening in the brain that they need to do it this way, regardless of what's happening, because it's no longer a story where they're interacting with someone and watching the reactions. They are completely in their own world at this point. And their eyes are I can't remember which way, if it's up to the right or to the left. But yeah, it's a singular experience, such that, you know, if it was dark enough, you could leave and come back.
That's such an interesting observation. So Noel, what were your takeaways from this year's TEDx talks?
Well, it's interesting, yes, because I'm there not right from the beginning. I used to be one of the curators and helping find people. So now I meet people, but I do read the scripts. And I mean, there's a lot of takeaways. Let's be honest, I'm in a funny position to let people know who are listening, because I'm the host, which means I'm the MC, but I also coach people. So I have the role of a speaker, but also a facilitator and the program coordinator, which means making a lot of decisions on the program as well. So I'm kind of in this weird little netherworld. So I always take away things that maybe aren't applicable to the speakers, but I have to do speaking. Now I have to do program. One of the amazing things I learned is what a highly functioning team is. And it gets reinforced that having an ego is very detrimental to the whole process. We're all in this together. And I felt like it succeeded because they wanted the whole event to work and to be something special. When everyone does that, when everyone pulls in the same direction, as cliched as it sounds, it works. But if you imagine everyone trying to pull in different directions, we wouldn't go anywhere, and it crashes or it stalls. That was one of the big ones. It's very interesting to go through the coaching and watch how people develop and whether people are willing to change and what they can and can't do in that amount of time. And as a coach, you need to learn how to help them get the best out of what they have. And it's not about you telling them what to do. It's trying to uncover. And humor is a huge part of that. People are very resistant to using humor. It's very challenging for everyone. And uncovering humor rather than giving people things. Anyway, the whole process enlightens you into how to help people as best you can, but also learn how to do that. The skills for that are very challenging to learn and to reinforce.
Absolutely. And going back to the team from my angle of being totally new to this, obviously, I saw a team that was absolutely exceptional because, for one thing, they always preempted what my questions would be. If I'm thinking to myself, I wonder what we do next, or I wonder what will happen, I'll guarantee that very next meeting, it was all explained. So it was absolutely incredible. And I began to realize that there was way more to this whole organization than just choosing a few people and popping them on a stage. You know, I mean, it was so well thought out and so well preempted that we lacked for nothing. And we had the most amazing opportunities. And what I found interesting was how good the coaches were, you included, at giving the feedback in a very nice way. Yes. Like nobody ever insulted us, do you know what I mean? But at the same time, we had the truth. If what we were doing didn't work, it didn't work. And I found everybody was incredibly good at saying it in such a positive way.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's 100% true, but I think it's, you could really say there's a lot of Toastmaster pedigree in that or basis. It's very much how Toastmasters will teach people to give feedback. And that's one of the things people don't realize that Toastmasters do. They have to learn how to give proper feedback that people will accept it and use it rather than just, as you said, be insulted or just have it bounce off them and say, well, that's useless, but also giving proper feedback. Because now I'm going through and I'm seeing each person on the coaching team. I think virtually all of them have some experience with Toastmasters. I think they all do. So that really does help.
Yeah. So can you think of a few examples of how one could give feedback in a good way as opposed to a bad way?
Oh, absolutely. This doesn't come from Toastmasters. I don't know who started this or who even you coined the term of the sandwich method. That is that you say something that's positive so people are in a receptive. You acknowledge something that's good. So you say, I love the way you brought that character to life. Then you put your suggestion. I love the way you brought that character to life. What would happen if you, you know, did that with the other characters and basically saying, look, one of them's really well done. The others, I can't make heads or tails of them because I know the audience will always remember that particular character. So you say something positive, you say your suggestion, and then you say something else positive at the end. The more you practice it, the better you get at it. And it's variations on that. And it's always oriented towards getting better. It's always with the acknowledgement that, hey, it's also my opinion. I don't think this is right or wrong, but I do ask you that you listen to it. And we do it respectfully. Yeah. And we realize these are people listening to it. And sometimes once in a while, you just realize there's times that people aren't in the mood for any feedback. Like, I'm sure, Sue, by the time you got to the end, like you just received hundreds upon hundreds of bits of feedback. When you go to a Toastmaster meeting or another one to practice or another meeting, there's some point where, you know what, you kind of don't need to hear anything. You don't.
Well, there were times along the way where I thought, that's it. Nothing's changing now. I've done it. Do you know what I mean? And then somebody would say something else and think, oh, well, that's a good point. But I think the development part is very interesting as well. And one of the things that stood out for me was, you know, from my point of view, memorizing is so difficult. I mean, once I'd got that thing memorized, there were certain parts of it that I kept forgetting. And I remember that when we were doing the presentation part and that, please, can we use our hands a bit more? I was having to be more like letting go, if you like. And Tanya was hilarious because I said, look, I don't do this. I said, I'm British. It's not going to happen. And she said, well, you've got to just loosen up a little bit. And I said, but I don't want to make a fool of myself. And she said, I absolutely promise you that I will never allow you to make a fool of yourself. And that was really cool. I thought, I can trust her. I mean, I can trust all the coaches, but she happened to be the one who said it that time. And as long as I had that assurance that I wasn't going to make a complete idiot of myself, then it got a lot easier.
Yeah, you're right. That trust factor as well, when you talk about feedback, is enormously important. And usually building the trust first before you give any meaningful feedback is also very helpful.
Yeah. So you had your team takeaway and you had your development takeaway. Do you have any other takeaways?
Well,
do it again.
I would absolutely do it again. This was my third time as the host. And, you know, it's really challenging, but incredibly rewarding because you get to experience that on the stage. If you enjoy that or enjoy public speaking, it's an opportunity that you may never get. Like last time it was 1,000 people at Bell Performing Arts Center. I would have never been on stage with that unless I was the host. Mm-hmm. Well, I shouldn't say that. Maybe one day they'll accept one of my TED Talks, but that didn't work out so well.
Did you put in for a TED Talk?
Well, that was my joke in the second year TEDx Bear Creek Park. I have put it in for that. Didn't work out so well. So when we had something go wrong at the rehearsal, I launched into my TED Talk idea. Now you can see why I'm the host, right? I failed upwards. And then all of a sudden the delay got longer. So I went into one of my talks on how to fix sports. And then I said, well, that's my idea. I don't know if those would ever be real TED Talk ideas, but I enjoyed doing that. There's personal fulfillment from going out and delivering. The scripts to be a host, even though you come out very briefly, it's well over 3,000 words you kind of need to memorize if you want to go without cue cards. So it's a challenge. Mm. It really is a challenge to do that. But everyone's so supportive. Like Tanya had created these massive cue cards for me. I didn't need them, which was amazing. But it's truly that point that I didn't need them because they were there kind of feeling. But the safety net was critical to just feeling comfortable.
I really can empathize with that. What I found difficult, I'm quite happy with a fairly large audience, but I always feed off people's reactions. I love it when they start smiling and when they start nodding their head. Basically, you're only saying what they know already. I have parents and I have teachers who know exactly what I'm talking about because they see it every day. So it's lovely when you get the head nodding and you get the ahas and you can see the ahas going off like popcorn. That's really easy and it keeps you going. And obviously you don't have to memorize. You can just say what comes into your head. But what was really difficult, I found, we were only allowed, what, 4 or 5 people? And for the dress rehearsal, you were all wearing masks. So you couldn't even see if you were smiling. And that was a challenge in itself. Did you find that?
It really is a challenge to speak to cameras only. Having spent about a year mainly on Zoom, and even for Toastmasters, we meet on Zoom, and all of a sudden you're trying to focus on the camera and you can't see other people. You start to get a little used to it. It's not that great. There's nothing like being able to have that connection with the audience. It really is hard. I found even having 4 or 5 people and cracking a little joke or just saying something humorous and hearing 4 people laugh or 3 people or 1 meant something. You're right. Yeah. That interaction is critical. It just makes it such a richer experience.
Yeah, it was a very rich experience. It was one of my dreams on my bucket list. And I don't know why I put myself through it sometimes when I used to wake up thinking about my talk. I would literally wake up in the morning and I'd be talking my talk to myself in my head. It was hilarious. But it was such a privilege to be able to do it. And it's having so many people helping us and so many people guiding us and knowing that it was going to be a very professional event in the end made it so worthwhile. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity. And it was lovely to meet all the other people and to hear their talks. And even I could see how some of their talks were developing over. And then we had the most amazing gift at the end of the talk. Every speaker had this amazing, I don't know how you would call it. It's a 1-page sketch of our talk, and it's made up of words and little images. And the person who does it, she had captured every single main point that I wanted to make. And now we have this beautiful keepsake of our talk in a very different form, not just the film, but in this beautiful sketch note. So if anybody's listening to this and they need to know about sketch notes, then please go to visuallifestories.com. You'll see all the examples there.
Yeah, that was a neat thing that appeared last year. And Ellie had the idea of presenting the speakers with that especially.
Amazing. So no, this has been fun. I'm sure we could go on for much longer, but is there anything you'd like to say to everybody to how do we get in touch with you? What are your wonderful skills that you'd like to share with people?
Yeah, well, I'm revamping everything as we speak. You know, obviously I do public speaking, I do MC, and I do storytelling. Through the Surrey Shares is the one project, through TEDx Bear Creek Park is the other project. But honestly, you know, noel.bentley@shaw.ca is the simplest way, because the other website's just going to come up in not too long. It's going to be noelbentley.ca anyway.
Beautiful. Yeah. Noelbentley.ca. Look for it. And if not, get in touch with Noel at noel.bentley@shaw.ca. And I'm just going to say thank you so much. I so appreciate your time. I know all the speakers appreciated all the coaching you were able to share with us and our introductions. And just thank you.
We appreciate it. I know to a person, the entire leadership team, all of the coaching team, all the curation, everyone just loved working on this project. And this year was just an amazing success, even with all of the extra challenges. So, and you guys, you made it easier on us somehow, it felt like.
Yeah, I'm not sure if easy was what I felt this end. Okay. It was absolutely a fantastic experience. And I would recommend it to anybody who has a message that they'd like to deliver. So thank you to everyone who is listening. Please subscribe, follow, share. And if you'd like to see what the whole Dyslexic Society is up to, please go to www.thewds.org. We'd love to hear from you at info@thewds.org. And I hope you'll join us to hear some of the speakers and more of the coaches of the TEDx Bear Creek Park organization. Until next time, take care, stay well, and bye for now.